Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Masal. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today our guest is Amanda Farrow. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. I am Amanda Farrow. I am an analyst. I'm a former game journalist and podcast producer and co-host and consultant in the game industry. I've been doing this, been in and around the game industry now for a little over a decade. These days, instead of just writing about video games, I tend to help clients with video games. More specifically, I try to help indies with video games.
Which I think is really cool.
I love indies.
Well, as an indie developer, I appreciate that.
I'm here for it every day.
Okay. But this podcast is called What Else Do You Do? So what else do you do?
Oh my goodness. You know, one of the things that my dad talked to me about when I was really little is he's just like, listen, Amanda, you're going to have to choose a thing. And I'm like, Dad, I don't know if I can. I just want to do everything. So, you know, in my 30s, I decided I'm going to do everything because why not? So I have all the professional stuff and I stream. And then in my off hours, when I do have them, I'm a mom. Well, I'm a mom on my on hours too, but my children go to school, so they're not home full time, thankfully. I would be a terrible stay at home, like at home schooling. I don't think I could do it. It was really bad during the pandemic. So I'm so glad they're back in school with professionals that know what they're doing because mom's not one of them.
Yeah. In the beginning of the pandemic, I have a small child and daycare was closed and that was
pain.
Pretty rough.
So my dad told me, he's just like, listen, you got to pick a thing. And I did for a little while. You know, I did one thing at a time. I'd write because that's like the undercurrent of my entire existence is I have to write or I implode. And the other portion of it is just like I just do whatever I'm called to do at the time. And right now it's, you know, it's doing consultant work and analysis and virtual economy, which is my podcast. But in my off hours.
Podcast, by the way, I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so much fun recording it. It honestly is. It's my heart work. It just makes me so happy.
It does sound like you're having fun recording it.
Nobody has more fun than me and Mike, honestly. Like, we just love business so much and we want to help developers especially better understand the industry so they can make good decisions, right? And feel like comfortable talking to publishers and not be like, oh God, everything's a lot.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, so I come from AAA and I made the switch a couple years ago and I have basic understanding of like kind of economic stuff and, you know, things like stocks and bonds and all of that.
Sure.
But like in terms of how like, you know, IP rights are negotiated between like, you know, publishers and studios, like all of this is so opaque, like nobody publishes. I mean, recently, no. I think people have become more kind of public with information, but
especially if they're working in indie, it's because everybody's got to help everybody. Otherwise, no one makes any traction. This entire industry is fueled by opacity, which is sad, but also normal, weirdly enough.
It does make sense. Most industries, like, you know, like the business agreements are not typically published. So
No, but also other industries are not necessarily fueled entirely by passion, right? And that's how we end up in these
small
exploitative
groups of people trying to like figure out what they're doing is usually not what like Toyota has to deal with. Yeah,
no, it's not small groups of people making indie cars, right? So anyway, that's what I do professionally. But what I do in my off time is I'm a fiction writer, and I'm a mom to 4 kids. I have a gaggle of children.
4 is a lot.
4 is a lot.
What's the spread?
So my eldest is about to turn 18, which is incredible. And it's been raining on my face a lot as I think about her going off to college. And thankfully, she's not going far, which, you know, 3 hours I can handle. Anything more than that, I think I'd be just an absolute disaster. I'd be a spicy disaster as opposed to a hot mess. So she's going to be 18 in March. My second eldest is 13, and my 2 biological children are 10 and soon to be 9.
Okay. So, can you tell me about how like your kind of like family formed in its current
my family's origin story?
Yes, because this is kind of a loaded question. Well, I mean, this is kind of like a fake question because I've heard your podcast, so I've kind of
so you know. Know,
yeah. But since our audience probably is not aware.
No, it's fine. So obviously I have my two biological children and my partners, since we are polyamorous, they have their two biological children. My husband and I have been together for 16 years. As of this year, we've been married for 13, and our partners, Mike and Danielle, have been married for over 20 at this point, and they've been together for a very long time. I always forget how long they've been together because once you get past 20 years, it's just like it's a moot point.
Yeah, 20 years is a long time. Yeah,
it's a really long time because they've been together since college, and so my husband and I have been together since college as well. So the origin story of the family itself is kind of super unorthodox because our family's really unorthodox. Mike and I were best friends and we fell in love. And my husband and I, we have been, you know, it's never been an open marriage, but it's always been like a very flexible marriage where we're like, if you vibe with someone, like just come and hang out and let me know and we'll talk about it. So it turned out that all four of us vibed. And my husband and I were facing eviction in Vancouver because that's where we are originally from, is from British Columbia. So we were facing eviction from our apartment. It was beautiful. I loved that apartment. We were there for 4.5 years. It's where our children had started growing up. And we said, well, why don't we make a go of it? Let's like smush our families together and see what happens. And so the Canadians ended up moving to America about 4 years ago, four and a bit years ago at this point, almost 4.5. And we all moved into this beautiful house that I live in. And I haven't lived in a house in years, not since I left home when I was 18. So we live in this beautiful house in the suburbs in New Jersey, which I'm not much of a suburban mom, but, you know, I kind of do my best. And overnight, almost, I became a mom to 4 kids. Which was at the time, you know, I had a teenager that I hadn't been with since she was a baby, obviously, because I hadn't known her that long. And that presented its own host of challenges. But this family is, it's taken like almost five years to really settle in as people. Because, you know, when you move in with someone, it's always, there's that transition period where you're just like, I don't know how to live with you. What is this?
And especially since it's unconventional, right?
So yeah, absolutely. And we have to, you know, for the most part, locally at least, like we're not, right? We don't talk about it because we don't want other people to look at our children differently and be like, oh God, your parents are like perverts or freaks or something.
Yeah, they don't want you to like,
and we don't want you to be like
a sex commune people.
Yeah, well, and that's not the point, right?
Yeah,
the point
I'm not implying that it is, but you don't want them to think that.
Exactly, because people don't actually fully understand what polyamory really is. And polyamory isn't necessarily about sex. It's about love, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to fall in love with my best friend. That was kind of like that's different. We should talk to our people because there's something weird going on here. And it just turned out that everything just kind of slid into place, and it's taken 5 years of a lot of hard work to create this family, but I've never seen my children, any of my kids, happier than they are today.
Well, that's really great.
Yeah.
So how did you introduce the idea to your children?
My biological kids are still too small to truly understand it. They just know that they have bonus parents.
Okay.
And that their bonus parents love them very, very much, and that this is an unconventional family, but it's our family. And think about it in terms of you have a lot of extra love in your life now. Mm-hmm. And you have two more parents that you can hang out with, and you can play video games with, and you can chase around the house and read stories to. And, you know, my biological children especially wouldn't be who they are today if not for Mike and Danielle, you know, influencing them in really beautiful ways.
And your...
My bonus kids?
Yeah, your bonus kids. Mm-hmm. How did they react? Because they were older, right?
So they were older, yeah. My second eldest was 8, about to turn 9. And honestly, they are identify as non-binary now, but at the time they were going by he, him. So, you know, they were just so thrilled that they had more parents and more siblings and more people and more love. And so the rest of it didn't matter. But having to introduce that to a teenager, to someone who was freshly 13, we had an actual conversation where we sat down and we talked. And we said, you know, this is going to be the new structure of the family, and we want you to feel comfortable talking to us about this and talking to us about your feelings. And if you're angry or you're upset or you feel crappy about this, you know, we don't want you to keep it inside. We want you to talk because we want you to have a voice. And we don't want you to feel like your entire life is being railroaded, you know, in a direction that you don't necessarily agree with. So talk to us. And she did, you know, she really has taken this family structure that is so strange and somewhat outlandish, because there's nothing else like it. Kitchen table polyamory is not usually done because it's very difficult, especially when you start involving children. But because there's so much more stability now, she feels secure. My second eldest feels secure. And my littlest kids are so adaptable. They're just like, we don't care. We have more parents. This is great. We have dogs.
Well, this was their norm, right? So
yeah, they've never really thought about it. They're just like, oh, no, our family's just different. Who cares? And if people don't like us because our parents are different, like, screw them. We don't need them. Like, the littlest kids are just, they don't care. They take after their mom. They're like, oh, you're judging me? Bye.
So you just said something that I've never heard before. What is kitchen table polyamory?
There are so many different kinds of polyam structures. You know, there's the triad. So it's like, you know, a couple brings in somebody else with, you know, gender non-specific. And what we do, because we're involved around the family unit, the kitchen table polyamory is supposed to be about everyone in a polyamorous, I don't know, we're in a polycule. That's what it's technically called. In a polycule, they can sit and have dinner together and all really care about one another. And we just took it one further than that. You know, we didn't just have dinner together one time or once a month. We live together. We're raising our kids together, you know, as team mom and team dad. And, you know, it's hard to do. It's in a lot of cases, it's almost impossible to do. But we've somehow managed to defy the odds.
Yeah, like it's having like two people kind of getting along is difficult enough.
Hard.
So having more people involved,
yeah,
gotta be very challenging sometimes.
It could, like, it used to be, especially at the beginning. It was a lot of like trying to figure out like how we were supposed to all work together and what it all meant, and how we were supposed to integrate like our queer relationships in with our heterosexual relationships, and how this was all supposed to work, considering, you know, like Mike and Danielle were just, you know, they were just heterosexual when they met us, and my husband and I are bisexual, and we always have been. So we're just like, eh, sexuality is fluid. What are you worrying about this for? Are you worried people are going to judge you? And they're like, yes. And they don't worry about that anymore because it's been 5 years.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great, that's a great origin story.
Yeah. So that was kind of the origin story of the big family, as my littlest child says. She's such a little sweetheart. The big family. I want the big family forever.
Oh, that's,
it was nice. Wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely, appreciate from a logistics standpoint, having another set of parents, like it's gotta be,
It's great. Honestly, always having backup no matter what, never feeling alone in the parenting decisions that you're making. And we have a council of parents, you know, that that we convene.
You can actually have a vote because it's not.
Exactly. And for the most part,
like if you disagree with each other, that's a split vote. Like
that's a never split gonna, vote. It's true.
Never gonna go anywhere.
We don't tend to do too much voting, but we do a lot of discussing.
Yeah.
And we don't always agree on everything. I mean, there are, like, our childhoods are all informed by various forms of trauma and upset and challenges and histories that, you know, we unpack in therapy. Mm-hmm. So we don't always agree because our trauma gets in the way.
For sure.
Or, you know, our life experiences are completely different. And my husband and I are Canadian, you know, so our values are different than probably slightly East more Coast sensible. American. Yeah. It's we're a little softer in some ways and a little more rigid in others.
Hmm.
And there's still there's so much overlap though, because we're all a bunch of eldest children, all four of us.
Okay. Oh, that's an interesting combination.
Yeah. So we're like very get the thing done, you know. We'll figure it out.
It's like a group of captains.
Yeah, exactly. But it actually works out really great. And the pandemic especially has been really make or break for a lot of couples and a lot of families. And for us, it made us stronger. It made us a more holistic unit. It made us happier because we had each other. And like, we can't go outside and hang out with our friends, or I can't go home to Canada yet. But we had each other, and that really was this enormous source of comfort.
Yeah, I'm originally from Japan, so it's still very difficult for me to visit my parents. I can definitely understand how, you know, having relatives in foreign countries, it's difficult, and
it's hard.
Having backup must be nice.
Yeah, because we're not alone, because we have each other. And the longer that we're here and we're more firmly entrenched in, you know, in our local schools and with extracurriculars, you know, my husband's a softball coach he's an assistant coach. And I volunteered for the local marching band because, you know, our eldest daughter was the drum major, which is incredible. And if you've never heard of marching band, it's a very American thing. And it's very strange, but it's wonderful. And it's music and marching around and twirling flags. And it's very exciting. So, and I'm on the PTO. So like the more we establish ourselves as just people in the community, the less people think about, oh, they're such a weird family. Well, no, I mean, we are, yes. But also at the same time, we're just like,
also very normal. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just getting by. We're doing what we got to do. And taking care of our kids. We're parents first at the end of the day.
For sure.
The rest of it is not a whole lot of anyone else's business unless we allow it to be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's kind of bring it back to video games, since this is theoretically a video game podcast. So what do you get out of being a parent that you don't from your work in video games?
Oh man, the empathy. The empathy is such a big thing, right? And being a writer means that I have to draw on empathy all the time to like kind of either identify with my subjects and my sources when I'm writing or when I'm writing fiction. Empathy is such a huge thing. And as a parent, you kind of have to look at the world through your kids' eyes, like a lot of the time, especially when the older they get, the more you have to do it, because it's less about setting up boundaries for your children and more about guiding them and helping them to make really good decisions for themselves that you might not agree with, but that are still right for your kid. And that tying that back to gaming is understanding audience and understanding the context of the games themselves, how they're made, why they're made. It's the same kind of thing with children. You know, they're their own entities, right? Yeah, okay, so I birthed a couple of them, but that doesn't make them mine. It just means I contributed to their existence.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's an excellent point. You know, I think in terms of my profession, I'm a producer, and I've been managing people in various different functions within video games for about, oh God, I don't want to think about this too much.
Don't crumble into dust. It's okay.
13 years.
Yeah, that tracks.
So 12 years. And
I've been in the industry for 12 years too. So I got it.
And I think it's definitely, I think, made me a better manager, you know, because
the compassion,
yeah,
quite I frankly, think, like being a parent, being a good parent means that you have to have an abundance of compassion for your kids. You don't like have to validate their shitty behavior if they're being jerks, but, you know, like understanding them and identifying with them, even in those hard moments, that does help you be a better manager. It made me a good EIC over at Game Daily. When I was managing a news team, you know, my team would come to me and be like, oh my God, I'm having the worst day. I don't Like I can do the work, but I don't know. And I don't know how I'm going to get it done. And it's just like, just take a mental health day. You got to take care of yourself. Otherwise you'll burn out and your work will suck. So sure. Go take care of yourself. It's super, super important to take care of your mental health.
Yeah. That kind of like more of long-term thinking is definitely, I mean, because when you're raising a kid, like, yeah, it's like, you're not really, I mean, you are worried about today, but you are more worried about like, how's this project going to work out?
Exactly. You know, when the kid is leaving home, like my kid's going to be leaving home next summer and heading off to college for the first time. You know, how comfortable am I that she's going to go out into the world and she's going to make good decisions for herself and she's going to take care of the people around her and be an empathetic and loving human being to others and to herself? And I think we've done a pretty good job with that, considering where she started. And, you know, where she started was like, she was angry all the time and she was, you know, pretty brokenhearted about stuff that had happened to her personally with her friends. And the person that she is today is just truly an exceptional human being. She's not just smart and beautiful, but she's compassionate and loving and patient and wise and kind and all of these other really amazing things that she always was, but she just needed a little bit of an elbow from mama there to make sure that she kept embracing the best pieces of herself.
Well, let's flip that question around. How do you think being a parent affects you as a games professional in terms of your creative output or process?
Well, if we're going to be completely honest, it hampers my creative output and process a lot of the time, because being a parent is the most important thing to me, which means that the things that I love and that I want outside of being a parent tends to take a back seat a lot of the time. If the kids are home, I'm taking care of them. If they're sick, they're in my charge, you know, because I'm the one that has the most flexibility. And so that means that a lot of the time, if I have big dreams or I have big goals, those are on hold. They have to be on hold because I can't, as much as I want to say I'm going to be absolutely everything at the same time, I can't be. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I left Game Daily is I'm like, I can't be a parent and do this. And I can't choose not to be a parent anymore. So I have to choose not to lead this team anymore because it was too much. Yeah. So they have negatively affected the quantity of my output, but have positively affected the quality of my output. Because when I'm able to write and when I'm able to produce, it's high quality because I'm focused and I've done all the things I need to do. My children have nourished me and they've nourished my soul. And I feel good about, you know, attacking the rest of the work. It just means that it's later in the day or it's at weird hours. You know, you just kind of got to do what you got to do.
I guess we'll lead to the last question, which is, what is something you want people to know about being a parent, or maybe specifically parenting in an
unconventional family?
Yeah.
It looks more complicated than it actually is. It looks like there are more moving parts than there actually are when you have this many people in a household, but when it works and when everyone gels, it's beautiful. The children look after each other. There's a lot of compassion. There's a lot of love. There's a lot of empathy. They solve a lot of their conflicts between one another. They solve it together. You know, sometimes they ask for the parents to intervene, but for the most part, they talk it through because they've watched how the four of us talk it through. You know, we're private about the big conversations because it's none of the children's business and we want them to just be kids and not worry about, oh my God, what's going on with team mom and team dad. But they've learned a lot of those skills just by watching how we talk to each other. So that's how they talk to each other. It is like that. So even though my life is really complicated in the sense that I constantly am driving children around to like activities, you know, there was soccer and marching band and Girl Scouts and Ninja Warrior classes. And, you know, it's always something. Now they have after school enrichment. But outside of like the actual hours that I'm busy, what I'd want people to know is that, you know, in our household, because everything is led with kindness, whether that is in disciplining, we don't discipline through anger, we discipline through kindness and through understanding, meeting our children where they are emotionally and in terms of their maturity. Like, I want people to know that it seems really complicated, but it all comes down to love and kindness. And there's nothing more important than treating your children the way that you want to be treated as an individual. And it doesn't change if your family structure changes. It doesn't change, you know, with more partners or fewer partners or more children or fewer children. It was not much of an adjustment to have two more kids, to be honest. It was a lot of emotional labor to try to make sure that my eldest children felt safe and secure and happy, you know, in their new family structure, and know that they had just infinite support and that, you know, I'm aggressively on their team no matter what. And not very often are you able to choose your mom, but they chose me. And that's why I'm mama, right? Like, I'm mama to my eldest children too. You know, I'm not just Amanda. I'm not just, you know, hey lady. I'm their mom. And I always show up for them. And, you know, it's a weird family, but leading with love is everything. And that's really the only thing that I want people to know, is that this family is just the epitome of love.
I think it's a wonderful story, and it's a wonderful like arrangement that you have. And I think it's delightful that you've made this like very special entity and made it work. And
the kids are happy.
Yeah.
Like, more than anything, if the kids were unhappy and they hated each other, or they just were not interested in making this work, like, this family wouldn't work, because our kids are absolutely everything. And if they weren't happy and secure and fulfilled, you know, we wouldn't be here. We would have gone back home. We would have been like, all right, well, this was a failed experiment. You know, let's go back home to Vancouver. Let's go back home to British Columbia and, you know, go our separate ways, and away we go, because the kids are the priority. But the children have just been so beautifully shaped by this family, and they've shaped us as a result as well. And we're better people because they have shown us how to be better parents. And it's really quite beautiful. Kids are amazing. They're just the worst sometimes, but being a parent is legitimately one of the most fulfilling things that I've ever done.
I totally agree. Well, thank you very much for your time. And
thank you for having me.
It was great talking to you.
This was really, really lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.